we had to take it to the capital of Ecuador, Quito, and then from Quito on a plane, or from Guayaquil maybe, to Paris. But first it got stuck in Ecuador because of troubles with the flight, I think. And then it got stuck in customs here in Paris. So it's been quite hard to get it all the way here.
Could you talk about the negotiations here at the COP, and do you feel your voice is being heard inside the summit?
I think that indigenous people's voices are the voices that should be heard. Indigenous people should be inside the actual negotiations, but we're not. Those who are actually negotiating right now, they might not have to live with the consequences of climate change, but I will. I will have to live with it. My sister, my little brother, and my children, they're all going to have to live with the consequences of climate change. And who are they to decide over my future, over my sister's future, over my children's future?
Nina Gualenga of the Sariaku of the Ecuadorian Amazon, speaking to Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman. Special thanks to Mike Burke and to Carla Wills, to Nermeen Sheikh and to Dina Guzder, to Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! We'll be speaking tonight at 9 at the Place to Be here in Paris. Thanks for joining us.
KVU Community Radio and Heartbeat Silent Sound Systems proudly presents Silent Nights 2015, a silent disco and silent auction benefit for KVU, December 19th, 8 p.m. at Manifestation PDX. This very special silent disco features talented KVU DJs and MCs. You'll have three channels of danceable jams to choose from, including bluegrass, the Grateful Dead, reggae, afrobeat, world music, hip-hop, funk and soul, electronic dance music, bhangra, and global bass music. There's something for everyone. We'll also feature a silent auction with art from local artists as well. Silent Nights will be on Saturday, December 19th from 8 p.m. to midnight at Manifestation PDX, 2020 Southeast Bush Street in Portland. For more information on the lineup and tickets and more, go to kboo.fm/silentnights2015. That's Silent Nights 2015, a benefit for our community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Thank you to all of our new and renewing members during our winter membership drive. That makes KVU one of the best community radio stations in the country. We fell a few thousand short of our goal of 55,000, so if you didn't have a chance to give, it's never too late. Remember, for the month of December, if you become a new member or if you increase your giving over last year, your gift will be matched by a number of local businesses and individual donors. Donate now at kboo.fm/give. Thank you once again for being the best supporters a station could ever ask for.
KBOO Portland. The time is 5:02, and coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KVU Evening News.
Coming up on the KVU Evening News, climate talks in Paris have been extended an additional day, and some nations are accusing the U.S. and others of sentencing hundreds of millions of poor people to death by not taking sufficient action.
Dow and DuPont have proposed a merger that would make the world's biggest chemical company.
And we'll hear from a prominent civil rights activist and pastor on the question of the radicalization of the San Bernardino shooters and why this is not the question the media should be asking.
Today the 11th. Good evening. This is the KVU Evening News for Friday, December 11th. 2015. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Jenka Soderberg. Two giants in the chemical industry, Dow and DuPont, said today they will merge to create the world's biggest chemical company. The merger, if approved, will create a company worth $130 billion. DuPont plans to cut around 10% of its workforce of 50,000 from the combined company. That's 5,000 employees who are set to lose their jobs once the merger is approved. According to the two companies, their new mega corporation will split into three branches after 2 years, one focusing on industry, one focusing on specialty products, and one focusing on agriculture. Both Dow and DuPont were two among a host of companies which fought a GMO ban sought by 150 farmers and their supporters in Josephine County in 2014. The farmers won against the companies and a subsequent bill in the Oregon legislature, but last year, Dow and DuPont contributed millions of dollars in Oregon to defeat a measure to require the labeling of genetically modified organisms. DuPont spent nearly $5 million to defeat the measure, and Dow spent $1.2 million in the campaign. The biggest spender in the campaign to stop the labeling of genetically modified foods in Oregon was Monsanto, which spent $6 million to defeat the measure.
A new report by the Center for Reproductive Rights has found that 2015 has seen a concerted effort across all 50 states to reduce women's access to reproductive health care. According to the report, the attack went far beyond attempts to defund Planned Parenthood. State legislators introduced nearly 400 bills and enacted 47 new laws restricting reproductive rights this year. The annual assessment issued this week details how politicians gave special priority this session to bills that interfere with the doctor-patient relationship, despite overwhelming opposition from the medical community. The report also reveals a surge in such restrictions in the South, including measures which force women to delay abortions in areas where their access to abortions is extremely limited to begin with. The report suggests that states continue to be right-wing policy incubators with, quote, a new crop of outrageous bills, signifying the ongoing experimental nature of measures introduced by opponents of safe, legal abortion care. For example, a measure in Arizona forces health care providers to lie to women about medical abortion reversal, while a provision in Oklahoma would permit warrantless searches of facilities that provide abortion.
And a new report about the education bill marking the end of No Child Left Behind questions the high level of support that this new law will provide to privately run charter schools. The report is characterized as a policy brief, and its authors looked at differences between charter schools and traditional public schools. Concerns about charter school policy expressed in the report include the share of publicly generated funds intended for delivering direct educational services that are misdirected in many of these schools. These funds are being extracted by many charter school administrators for personal or business financial gain. Among the 8 recommendations by the report's authors are a suggestion that state charter school laws be revised to ensure that any and all meetings between officials of schools follow public records and meeting laws.
Protesters in Chicago face a police force trained by the Israeli military, according to a report by retired Army Major Todd E. Pierce. According to information uncovered by Pierce, in a report appearing on consortiumnews.com, under Mayor Rahm Emanuel, a former Israeli military volunteer, the police force in the city has received extensive training from the Israeli forces. The result, according to Pierce, is that parts of Chicago are treated as if they were occupied territory under police or paramilitary rule. This collaboration between Israel and U.S. police agencies, including Chicago, emerged after the September 11, 2001 attacks on New York and Washington. Since then, by one count, at least 300 high-ranking sheriffs and police from cities large and small have received counterterrorism training in Israel. For instance, in January 2003, 33 senior U.S. law enforcement officials from Chicago and other major American cities flew to Israel for sessions on law enforcement in the era of global terror. In 2009, Israel's Midwest Consulate General co-sponsored an intensive seminar in Israel for senior Chicago police officials on intelligence-led policing techniques. Chicago Police Superintendent McCarthy was a key participant in this Israeli conference. At that 2009 seminar, Participants were invited to be part of an international gathering of public security officials and private technology companies sponsored by the Israeli government. In 2012, these security officials got to, quote, experience demonstrations of breakthrough technologies from Israel and tour security infrastructure at the Old City of Jerusalem during free trips to Israel sponsored by the government. And in November 2014, Chicago's police superintendent led another delegation of senior law enforcement officials to Israel as part of a training mission to, quote, engage directly with their Israeli counterparts to discuss best practices, unique strategies, and new technologies in a range of law enforcement areas, and to build collaboration between the Chicago Police Department and the State of Israel, according to the Israeli Trade Office. Major Pierce pointed out that this is significant because Israel does not have a domestic civilian policing model, but instead applies a counterinsurgency policing model intended for a population under military occupation, in other words, martial law.
After criticism from both the left and the right, Donald Trump tweeted Thursday that he will delay his visit to Israel and Jerusalem. The wealthy business tycoon and apparent presidential candidate had previously stated that he planned to visit the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and then force his way into the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the third holiest site in Islam. Muslim leaders in Jerusalem had pledged to nonviolently resist Trump's efforts to force his way into the holy site. Earlier this week, Trump made the controversial statement that all Muslims should be barred from entering the U.S. Although Netanyahu issued a statement that he did not agree with Trump's comments, he did not cancel his scheduled meeting with Donald Trump. In an interview with Fox News on Thursday, Trump said that he didn't want to put Netanyahu under pressure to meet with him. But some commentators like Philip Weiss with the Mondo Weiss blog noted that while Chris Matthews was enraged by Trump's recommendation that U.S. immigration officials ask travelers if they are Muslim, our own State Department has blasted Israel for denying entry or exit without explanation, notably to those whom Israeli authorities suspect of being of Arab, Middle Eastern, or Muslim origin. In addition, Weiss noted Israel's racial, ethnic, and religious profiling policy is currently being considered for use in U.S. airports.
With the mass shooting last week in San Bernardino County and others like it, reporters and pundits this week have begun to focus on the question, when were the shooters radicalized? Reverend Graylin Hagler with the Plymouth Congregational, or rather the Plymouth Congregational United Church of Christ, believes such questions oversimplify the actual problems. David Kesters of KBOO News spoke to Reverend Hagler to get the story.
I'm speaking with Reverend Graylin Hagler of the Plymouth Congregational United Church of Christ in Washington, D.C., and chairperson of Faith Strategies. Reverend Hagler wrote a piece a couple of days ago titled, When Were They Radicalized? That's Not the Right Question. This was in response to the mass shootings in San Bernardino, California last week, and then the subsequent coverage of the alleged shooters, Syed Farouk and Tashish Malik. Reverend Hagler, thank you for speaking with me today.
Well, thank you.
Now, could you explain briefly what you mean when you write, When Were They Radicalized? That's Not the Right Question.
Well, it's very much a sort of an empire point of view. And the empire point of view is that everything is all right out there, and therefore, if somebody is responding, whether no matter how misguided it is, but somebody's responding to what is going on in the world, they somehow had to be instigated, anger instilled in them. They had to be radicalized by somebody else because people, in a sense, and particularly people of color, never supposed to have a original thought for themselves. And I point back to what happened during the civil rights movement as blacks marched and demonstrated. The law enforcement in this country, as well as politicians, were looking for the Soviet agent that had radicalized the black folks to respond. Because what happens with the empire point of view is that the empire sees itself as good, and therefore there's no criticism that can be leveled towards it, and it refuses to look at its flaws. And these flaws have created a whole world that's in disarray. War after war, millions of people hurt, injured, maimed, killed, countries virtually destroyed. That is what has happened in the wake of this empire called the United States of America. And so to talk about who radicalized them or when were they radicalized is a nonsensical question, because the issue is that we have created conditions in the world so that people become angry, obsessed on their own because of the injustice and because of the refusal to hear the voices of the oppressed and poor.
Now, one of the problems that arise when events such as the San Bernardino shooting or even the abortion clinic shooting in Colorado Springs is that people demand answers and they want to know how and why such a shooting could occur. So, like, how should authorities investigate these horrific acts if not to try to find the source of influence and when such sources began?
Well, I mean, the issue is out there, it's the making the assumption that somebody else had to instigate it, somebody else had to give the order. That's not necessarily the case. I mean, when you continue to do what we're doing in the world, it's just like, for example, there was a report to try to get 41 people in Pakistan who was on the drone program kill list. We got 41 of them by wiping out 1,147 other people that we don't even know about. We don't know their names, families, children, women, men. And the issue is because we never raise the question of whether our motives are correct, whether our motives are constructive. In a sense, then we jump to the other question, which is, oh, there must be a boogeyman out there that's radicalizing everybody, rather than what we have done and are doing in the world that creates a context of bitterness, anger, and pain.
Now, in your piece, you write, quote, the U.S. and its allies need to allow countries and regions to develop without interference, manipulation, or control. Mechanisms of radicalization would be muted and impotent if the U.S. and its partners addressed human rights violations carried out around the world by itself, its partners, and its allies.
Human rights violations in the U.S., also the U.S. allies like Israel, as we look at it, I mean, even the violations, the human rights violations that have been carried out by countries of the European Union in partnership with the West, in partnership with the U.S. I mean, the thing is that we stand in a place where nothing is ever wrong. We never admit any guilt. We never admit any fault. We went into Iraq in 2003 and engaged in an unprovoked war. We've been engaged in warfare in Afghanistan for the last 14 years. And basically, we have removed people from power, toppled governments, attempted to put in place those that we felt were palatable to our cause and our political perspective. And so we therefore basically have disrupted an entire region. And then we act surprised and ask that strange question of who radicalized them and when did they get radicalized? And I'm not excusing their actions. I'm not excusing those actions because what happens very often is we see things come out, get manifest in some very insane ways. And this is one of those insane ways. But to ask the question of who radicalized them is not to look at ourselves and not to look at the fault that we have created and the pain that we have created. Unless we can get back to that place and begin to also create some investment in those areas rather than the continued withdrawing of resources so that you have the very rich who are our friends and you have abject poverty on the other side, it's always going to be fertile ground for recruiting. And it's really asking, and the paper is sort of asking us to take a look at ourselves and begin to transform the ways that we do things.
And that was the Reverend Graylin Hagler of the Plymouth Congregational United Church of Christ in Washington, D.C. And we were talking about his piece, When Were They Radicalized? That's Not the Right Question. For KBOO News, I'm David Kesters.
It has taken nearly a century for British police to carry out the same number of killings that U.S. police did in the last month. In shooting incidents over a period of 95 years, police in the U.K. have fatally shot 51 people. U.S. police have fatally shot 78 people in November 2015 alone. This trend is not just in England, but across Europe, where tighter gun regulation is in place than in the U.S., in 2013, only 6 bullets were fired in total by police in Finland. Iceland has 1 recorded fatal police shooting in the 71 years of the country's existence.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for media analysis from Counterspin. This will be followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Tomorrow's weather in the Portland area, rainy. 100% chance of rain. And then on Sunday, rainy again, this time with thunderstorms. Today in history, on December 11, 1941, Hitler and Mussolini announced that they were officially at war with the U.S. The U.S. government responded with their own declaration of war. The quote of the day is from the late John Trudell, a Native American leader and poet who died this week. He said, "Our bones, flesh, and blood are made up of the metals, liquids, and minerals of the earth, and everything on this planet is made up of the same things. As humans, we have being, so everything on the earth does too in our culture, because we're made of the same thing." He also said, "Protect your spirit, because you're in the place where spirits get eaten."
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. We are better than this. Dozens of national organizations, including labor unions, ran a full-page ad in the New York Times with that message, urging politicians to denounce hate and division. SEIU joined the organizations opposing what the Times ad says is a rising tide of Islamophobia, racism, and fear baiting. The organizations pledged to stand with any community that is targeted by hateful rhetoric and violence. The Office and Professional Employees International Union is filing an NLRB complaint against the Menards store chain, alleging that a contract provision for Menards managers violates labor law. The Menards contract managers must sign to work there states that manager compensation will be cut by 60% if, quote, a union of any type is recognized within your particular operation during the term of this agreement, end quote. Seth Goldstein is senior business representative for OPEIU Local 153.
That's an outrageous interference in employees' right to engage in concerted activity under the National Labor Relations Act. It also may be a violation of the North LaGuardia Act, which is a prohibition against what's called yellow dog contracts, which means that an employer would say that an employee can only be hired if they agree not to join a union or engage in union activity.
Goldstein says a thorough investigation has to be conducted into Menards' hiring practices, its manager contracts, and its employee handbook to determine if there may be other violations of the law.
A company can use in its compensation package prohibitions against organizing. That's a very dangerous thing, and that could also come to New York City or throughout the United States, and we have to put a stop to it, so we filed an unfair labor practice charge.
Hillary Clinton has won the endorsement of the American Federation of Government Employees. AFGE is the largest federal employee union. AFGE President David Cox Sr. says in a Clinton White House, working families will have a powerful ally in the ongoing fight to raise wages, create good jobs, expand benefits, and preserve workplace rights and protections. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa says the House-Senate conference report on the Customs Reauthorization Bill does little to deal with many shortfalls in the TPP trade deal. Hoffa says the measure preserves a waiver to allow use of fast track to pass trade deals with countries engaged in human trafficking and doesn't deal with currency manipulation. The Teamsters are urging a no vote when the bill is expected to be heard by Congress Friday.
Workers Independent News is heard daily on The Rick Smith Show, live 3 to 6 p.m. coast to coast at thericksmithshow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Workers Independent News is made possible in part through underwriting from the National Association of Letter Carriers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
In the latest news from U.S.-occupied Afghanistan, at least 50 people, including 10 soldiers, were killed in the Taliban siege of Kandahar Airport in southern Afghanistan this week, according to the Afghan Defense Ministry. The last of the 11 attackers was killed late Wednesday, the ministry said in a statement. Of those killed, 38 were civilians. Two policemen also died. the Nangarhar province east of Kabul in eastern Afghanistan, at least 16 fighters were killed in clashes between the Taliban and Daesh, known in English by the acronym ISIS. Just before those clashes, at least 11 Taliban fighters were killed in an airstrike by U.S. and coalition forces in Nangarhar. A boatload of Afghan refugees seeking to enter Europe capsized off the coast of Turkey. At least 6 children were killed, including a baby.
The International Conference to Combat Climate Change has been extended into Saturday. The 195-nation summit being held in Paris has been extended past Friday's deadline after an all-night negotiating session last night failed to reach an agreement. Although leaders were unable to provide a finished text for approval by today's deadline, the previous draft of the agreement suggests consensus on a number of issues. These include the following provisions: that global temperature rise should be held below 2 degrees Celsius or 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, although many developing nations were calling for a 1.5 degrees Celsius cap, that by mid-century, man-made climate change emissions should reach neutrality with a net zero amount of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases being released, and that the world's wealthiest countries will offer money to poorer countries to help them grow their economies while also cutting emissions. Although the two-week negotiation missed its deadline, this is typical for multinational climate talks. In the 20 previous summits, just one ended on schedule.
Friends of the Earth have issued a response to a leaked draft of the climate agreement in Paris. They say it falls far short of what's necessary, and if this draft ends up being the agreement, it will be a deal that fails humanity. According to Friends of the Earth, the proposed text dismantles the core foundations of the UN Climate Convention. The pillars of a just agreement, ambition, and equity have been completely undermined. After all the warm words of developed countries on a 1.5 degree limit, the new text contains no obligation to stay under this threshold. According to Friends of the Earth, the text could allow for carbon emissions to continue until 2099. The draft also leaves the door open to false solutions such as unproven carbon capture and storage techno-fixes and carbon markets. The environmental group points out that references to human rights have been stripped from the body of this UN agreement on the very day that people around the world mark Human Rights Day.
Authorities in Delhi, India, are considering shutting schools in the sprawling Indian capital as a bout of toxic smog stretches into a second month. The megacity, already the world's most polluted by some measures, has been suffering record levels of pollution, which exceed recommended World Health Organization guidelines by up to 20 times. The smog, a combination of exhaust from cars and trucks, dust, smoke from fires and industrial output, which is intensified by cold temperatures, is predicted to last for months to come. India has taken one of the hardest public lines at the climate change talks, now reaching a climax in Paris, and in the lead-up to these talks. The country's National Plan on Curbing Emissions, which focused on renewable energy, invoked the legacy of Mahatma Gandhi. Last week, the chief minister of Delhi announced a scheme to cut traffic and thus pollution by allowing cars with license plates ending in odd and even numbers to drive only on alternate days. 2 coal-burning power stations have also been shut. Studies in Delhi have shown that the smog is causing irreversible damage to the health of millions of children in the city, many of whom walk to school along busy roads during peak pollution hours. Many schools have already restricted outdoor activities. In Paris, one of the chief Indian negotiators has said that clean air is a human right. On the first day of the talks, India unveiled a global solar alliance of 120 countries to promote solar technology.
BP Oil is facing a new class action lawsuit from the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, this time in Mexico. The suit comes right after the final settlement of nearly $21 billion, the biggest pollution penalty in U.S. history, for the environmental catastrophe caused by the 2010 Deepwater Horizon disaster. This new lawsuit calls for BP to pay for the cleanup of Mexican waters and compensate for damage to marine life and the welfare of citizens such as fishermen who depend on a healthy Gulf of Mexico for their livelihoods. The damage was caused by the blowout of an offshore oil well the company had been drilling. Adding to the environmental damage was the toxic dispersant chemical subsequently used to turn the spilled oil into solid chunks. exploding on the evening of 20 April 2010 after gas seeped into the well being drilled, the Deepwater Horizon oil rig 50 miles off the southeast coast of Louisiana. The disaster killed 11 crew members and sank the oil platform to the bottom of the Gulf. Some 5 million gallons of oil escaped into the waters over the ensuing 3 months, coating hundreds of miles of shoreline. Marine life, coral reefs, and birds suffered extensive damage. Class action suits are new to Mexico. They've only been introduced as a legal remedy in 2010. Lawyers say the case should be resolved by the end of 2016.
An endangered sea turtle washed up on the Oregon coast yesterday with a body temperature 18 degrees below normal. The turtle was alive, but just barely. It was dehydrated and hypothermic when it arrived at the Oregon Coast Aquarium in Newport after being found by a beachcomber. The turtle is an endangered olive ridley typically found in tropical waters off Mexico or further south. It may have followed warm El Nino currents north for more than 1,000 miles, eventually finding itself in extremely cold northwest waters. The Oregon Coast Aquarium typically cares for one stranded turtle a year, but they expect to see many more in this El Nino year with warmer ocean currents off the northwest coast. And you are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast. We encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is David Kesters, Ryan Pritcher, Martin Dodge, and Robin Ryan. Special thanks to our engineer, Ian Gadbury. KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is myself, Jinka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website, kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K2